1039 1450 WKXL NHTalkRadio.com. Feltus and Kale is presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And Dan, before we get to our guest today on this edition of Feltus and Kale, we would be remiss if we did not mention the NCAA championship game on Monday night between Baylor and Gonzaga. And I would have to say, Dan, an upset.
It was an upset, no doubt about it, but Baylor looked like the better team throughout the entire game. Fast, great defense. It was really a fun game to watch.
No doubt about that. It was, and really, Baylor, with its defense and ability to make three-pointers, dominated from start to finish.
Start to finish, and, you know, they won the first half by 10 points, second half by 6 points, and it was a complete game for them, and took home the title. It was really a fun tournament all around to watch.
It was, and kudos to all who made it happen, because it wasn't the easiest thing in the world to do under these circumstances. So it was a terrific tournament, lots of great highlights, and we may talk a little bit more about that later on in the program today. But we will get to our guest right after these words. 1039 1450 WKXL NHTalkRadio.com. Feltus and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. 1039 1450 WKXL NHTalkRadio.com. Feltus and Kale, brought to you by, and proudly I must say, by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Our guest today is Mindy Messmer, and Mindy has been an environmental consultant and small business owner with a degree in public health, also a former state rep. Mindy was elected to the New Hampshire House of Representatives after exposing a pediatric cancer cluster on the seacoast. She is a founding member of the New Hampshire Safe Water Alliance. She has worked to advocate and inform people about the threats to drinking water. And Mindy and Dan worked together to pass important legislation to protect kids from exposure to lead and protect drinking water from arsenic and PFAS. And we'll find out what that is if you don't know, like myself. Also exposing threats around Superfund sites like, the Coakley landfill and elsewhere in New Hampshire, especially around the St. Gobain plant in Merrimack. And Mindy Messmer, a delight to have you today on Feltus and Kale.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Our pleasure.
Thank you so much, Mindy. And we'll talk, at length at some of the great things that we've been able to get done working together. But first, just for our listeners, can you talk about how water issues, specifically the pediatric cancer cluster and those issues, came to your attention and how you surfaced those issues for the public?
Thanks, Dan. And I just want to say thanks so much for all of the great work you've done over the past. We've worked together in the legislature. That the whole issue came to light, after having looked at sites and contamination for a good long time. It was actually moms in my neighborhood and my town that brought it to my attention. So never underestimate the power of mothers and their ability to get things done. But I became aware that there were kids in my own town that were literally dying of these rare forms of cancer here in the Seacoast. And I reported it to the state. I knew that it was an exceptionally high rate of these rare cancers these children were experiencing. It took 2 years for the state to come back and tell us that, yes, it was a cancer cluster. In fact, it was a double cancer cluster, two different kinds of cancer that were affecting these children, in addition to some high rates of cancers in adults that made me very concerned. And at the time, I decided to run for office after having been asked by somebody, because we needed people who could apply science to policy. And I became aware of just how important that was as I became aware of some of the other issues. Not only was there a big contamination issue going on at the Pease Air Force Base here, which continues in Portsmouth, but there are other areas across the state, and where every day it seems like we're learning more about areas that are affected by lots of different environmental exposures. And, New Hampshire has some of the highest rates of cancer in the nation. We have the highest rate of pediatric cancer in the nation. Our kids are getting cancer at the highest rate in the nation. And when we look at environmental exposures, we know we can prevent some of those cancers just by limiting exposures to environmental chemicals. So that's become a focus of a lot of the work I do and have done with you, Dan, in the House, and continue to advocate for in the legislature. And I'm happy to be here to talk about that today.
And Mindy, certainly the work has been tough work because there's entrenched big corporate special interests that battle against this kind of work. Can you talk about the overarching landscape of this fight to make sure that people have clean water in New Hampshire?
Yeah, there are several things that we have both worked on together. Lead, arsenic, it's a naturally occurring arsenic in our state, unfortunately, due to the type of rock that we have that affects our water that causes high rates of bladder cancer. We also have these Teflon-like chemicals called PFAS, which you referred to at the top of the program. These are chemicals that we became aware of through the work of an attorney who exposed the contamination down in Parkersburg, West Virginia, about the decades-long cover-up of the health effects associated with exposure to these Teflon-like components that are in just about every product you can imagine, from dental floss to pizza boxes. It has been a fight to, you know, there's always the question of how much is it going to cost to apply filters to clean these chemicals out of our water. But the cost of public health to address these chemicals in our body is really high. So when we look at things like arsenic, there's, you know, literally millions and millions of dollars that could have been saved in the last 15 years if we had been more proactive at strengthening our drinking water protections for arsenic. So there's a balance between the companies that don't want to assume the responsibility to treat these chemicals in our water, but what is the cost that we are paying, you and I, to respond to cancer and other illnesses in our families.
Mindy Messmer is our guest, and I know, as we mentioned at the top, Dan and yourself were able to pass some legislation, you know, while you were in office in Concord. But I have the feeling, Mindy, that there's still a lot of work to be done.
There is still a lot of work to be done. So, in particular, in this group of chemicals called PFAS, the Teflon-like chemicals, we're learning all the time about how many of these chemicals are already on the market. Every time we get close to understanding the public health impacts associated with a few of them, the chemical companies change the structure a tiny bit of these chemicals. We now know there are more than 9,200 of these PFAS chemicals in existence. And we only, in New Hampshire, we used to be one of the most proactive states based on the work that Dan and I did. We regulate 4 of these 9,200 chemicals in our water. Other states have since become a lot more proactive. States like Massachusetts regulate 6 of them, Vermont, I think 5 or 6, and other states are moving in the same direction. So, you know, it's a constant moving target, and the more we learn, the more the science develops about the public health impacts associated with exposure to these chemicals, the more I realize how we must change the way we do things and really address these chemicals as groups that are like one another, rather than one by one chemicals.
And if you, Mindy, if you are someone listening and you're concerned about your water or just what, you know, getting the water test, that kind of thing, what are some of the recommendations you would provide to people who are listening?
Well, the state lab will direct you. The New Hampshire DES has a lab, and you can call up and get information at the lab. It's very inexpensive to test your water. If you have a private well for arsenic, it's about $15, I think, from the state lab. These Teflon chemicals are a little bit more expensive, in the range of about $250 or so. The state lab can probably direct you to Granite State Labs is one of the places that I tell residents to go to. And if you want to just find out more information and get involved, we, on Facebook, we started New Hampshire Safe Water Alliance in 2016, and we're an advocacy group, you can join us on Facebook and ask questions in that group and get information to help you make some decisions. It's a big issue, especially in the southern tier of New Hampshire, the Merrimack area, where there's a company that has polluted at least 665 square miles of aquifer. And we're starting to learn about other towns now that are impacted, like Hudson and Litchfield and Londonderry, in addition to Merrimack and Bedford. So there are a lot of people who are starting to learn about this and reach out to people in the state who, like New Hampshire Safe Water Alliance, and to the state labs to get more information about that.
And, of course, that company is called Saint-Gobain. And what is the current status of Saint-Gobain's compliance with various orders and regulations, and where does that stand right now?
Yeah, that's a great question, Dan. So SB 309, your bill and mine that we were both co-sponsors of in 2018, was signed into law that required Saint-Gobain to put emissions controls on their stacks. And basically, ChemFab before them and now Saint-Gobain have been there for decades polluting the air in the Merrimack area. And SB 309 required them to put controls on their emissions. They moved here actually in 2002 from Vermont, shutting down their operation in Bennington because New Hampshire wasn't going to require these emission controls. So thankfully, our bill required them to do that. Unfortunately, the deadline passed in February 10th. They were supposed to put these controls on their stacks, and they did not comply with that. They were taken to court by the DES and actually the Merrimack Town Council. That settled a little bit out of court. So they're looking like they're going to have to comply with that by the end of July. So hopefully we'll see some change by the end of July. But a little concern there around the fact that they kind of didn't comply with the law. And we want to see them get controls on those stacks to stop polluting the area.
Generally speaking, from what you've indicated, Mindy, the farther north you go, In the state of New Hampshire, the water is better, correct?
I think we're starting to understand a lot more about these chemicals. They're basically showing up in most every landfill. And unfortunately, New Hampshire has about 300 unlined landfills, meaning they don't have a plastic liner underneath them to protect the groundwater beneath them. So the DES informed us in the last couple of weeks that about 77% of the landfills that they tested show these PFAS chemicals in the surrounding groundwater. Mm. And 41% or so of the people in New Hampshire have private wells. So 41% of the population may or may not know that these chemicals threaten their water. So it's important for people to understand that these chemicals are in everyday products. They show up in our landfills. They show up in our surface water. They show up in our groundwater. And I think we're starting to uncover where they're distributed in the state. We also have 20 Superfund sites in the state of New Hampshire. So every single one has PFAS in it so far that I've seen. So it's a big issue that we're starting to really peel back the layers of the onion on.
And of course, whether it's PFAS, arsenic, or lead, and all the legislation that we've gotten passed and some that has been challenged by some of these corporations, and then we came back and were successful in making even further progress. But that success, Mindy, you mentioned the activists on the ground, people like Andrea Miko and others who have raised their voice, the voice of not only them, but their family and their kids who are drinking this water. And you mentioned the New Hampshire Safe Drinking Water Alliance. And can you talk a little bit about the importance of activism and having your voice heard and getting active on this issue, which is not going away despite the progress we made? As Ken and you just mentioned, there's still a lot of work to do. Can you talk about how people can get involved and the importance of activism?
Yeah. Dan, you and I both know the power of these lobbyists in Concord, and we hear a lot about them, down in DC, but they're also really powerful in the state of New Hampshire. And representatives of these companies try to thwart all of our progress at every step of the way. As you mentioned, the law that got signed into law, SB 309, was challenged in our courts and appealed to the Supreme Court by a company called 3M that actually manufactures these chemicals. They took us to court over the new standards, the state of New Hampshire. We were successful in writing those directly into the statute of the state of New Hampshire. So we circumvented that lawsuit, but we couldn't have done it without the advocacy of people like Andrea and people in New Hampshire Safe Water Alliance and across the state, responding to our efforts to get people to speak up. The power of people is really important. As you know, Dan, when you're a state rep or a senator and you get 350 emails in 24 hours from activists telling you to pass something on their behalf or to not pass something, you kind of stand up and take notice of that. And it's really important. People need to be able to raise their voices and express how important it is to their families. I mean, my own family has been affected now by environmentally triggered cancer. It ruins a family. It really creates a lot of stress on your family. And when families speak up about their personal experiences, it really has an impact on being able to get things passed. And to understand that these things can be prevented with stricter regulation on things like our drinking water is really important. So the power of people is really important. And the senators and, you know, the governor and the representatives in the state house do pay attention to you when you speak up, especially en masse like that.
But apparently not enough are. But you and Dan did pass important legislation, as we mentioned earlier. But I sense, Mindy, some frustration that you had in your 2 years as a state representative in New Hampshire. And as you pointed out, that frustration maybe not, it didn't come from your colleagues necessarily, but from the many lobbyists that exist in and around the State House.
Yeah, a good example of that is our attempts every year since my first attempt in 2017 to put some of the levels of these chemicals on bottled water that's sold in New Hampshire. Because, you know, when there's an issue like there is in Merrimack or in the Seacoast and the chemicals coming out of your tap water exceed safe drinking water standards, the first thing you turn to is bottled water. However, bottled water is not as heavily regulated as tap water. The FDA regulates bottled water, and we've tried on several occasions as of right now. It's still going through the State House. It's actually going to get retained in one of the committees in the House to make the companies put these levels of these chemicals on the bottles of water, because you could buy a bottle of water from, say, Massachusetts, and it would not be as strict in terms of the levels of arsenic that the state of New Hampshire requires your tap water to have. So when we turn to bottled water, instead, when our tap water is not safe, you may not actually be safer drinking bottled water. So that's one of the, you know, that and that's heavily opposed by some of the bottled water lobby groups in the State House, which is why we continually can't get it passed. So it's an example of, you know, that's why it's so important for the people to speak up, because when we hear only from the lobbyists, the representatives and senators really don't know that the people are concerned about these issues. So it's really important for people to stand up and talk about it.
It's interesting you bring that up, because I often wonder where all the bottled water comes from. I mean, it is so prevalent these days, but I wonder where it comes from. I saw a report years ago, and I do mean years ago, on 60 Minutes that said a lot of the bottled water we got at that time, and it had to be well over 20 years ago that I saw this, but most of the bottled water, or at least one company, got all their bottled water from the New York City water supply. I don't know. Where does all this bottled water come from?
Well, some cases it is municipal water supplies. There is a big company that uses the Manchester City water supply to bottle their water. What happened after sometimes, too, when things tend to fail, I would consider failure in the legislature, other things happen. So after the first attempt that failed in 2017, the state of New Hampshire actually went out and sampled bottled water sold on the shelves, just a sample of them sold on the shelves in New Hampshire. And what they found was, remarkably, some of the bottled water being sold in New Hampshire had extremely high levels, in excess of even EPA levels, of these PFAS chemicals. And that company in Haverhill, Mass., immediately shut down. So sometimes it's from a city supply, which is actually better. Sometimes it's from just the groundwater aquifer, like companies like Poland Spring have their own wells that they tap into the groundwater aquifer to sell the water. It's a varied source. So you really ought to know, look at that bottle and figure out, you know, where does that water come from? Look into that company and understand what kind of controls they have and what kind of testing they do on their water. It's really important.
And I think it's worth mentioning, Mindy, as we continue to work on this issue and confront the challenges in front of us, that this work that you and I have done together has largely been bipartisan. And while I give Governor Chris Sununu, some guff on a number of issues, he has signed the legislation that we passed on childhood lead poisoning prevention. In fact, he advocated for it.
Mm-hmm.
He signed the arsenic bill. He signed the water standards bills.
Yeah.
Senate President, Republican Senate President Chuck Morse and I started together, him as chair and me as vice chair, the Water Infrastructure Funding Commission, funded by the MTBE settlement monies to help deal with not just MTBE groundwater issues, but also PFAS and PFCs. So that work is critical, but that work, again, was only bipartisan because of the broad bipartisan support in the general public to deal with drinking water and safe water issues. And what are some of the, we talked about some of these hot spots, including St. Gobain and on the seacoast and Coakley. You mentioned Coakley earlier. What is the status of dealing with the Coakley landfill on the seacoast, which has a big significant impact on that area?
This is one of the frustrating parts, actually. So the landfill, that's a nice name for it. It's actually a dump, basically. It has no liner underneath. It's been sitting there in the highest part of the seacoast for decades. It was closed, in quotations, by some action under the EPA's direction in the mid-1990s. We then found out about these PFAS chemicals and tested around the landfill and found exceptionally high levels of these chemicals in the landfill ground, in the groundwater surrounding the landfill, that has migrated off into five different towns, threatening the water supplies of private well owners and others, public water supplies in the area. There is also a very high level of these chemicals running off into surface water bodies, creeks that run from the landfill. All over the seacoast, there's one in particular called Barry's Brook, exceptionally high levels, in particular of one of these very bad actor, PFNA, one of the PFAS chemicals. And there, while we received a letter in one of our statutory commissions from the DES saying this pollution of the surface water body is unacceptable, we've been very frustrated because the federal action, the federal EPA, hasn't really taken a lot of action to curb these chemicals, and the EPA directs the activities on Superfund sites, and there's been some conflict between the state being a little bit more proactive in regulating these chemicals and the EPA not. So the EPA has not directed, I think, enough proactive action. There's still these chemicals going into the brooks around that landfill that threaten all these surface water bodies in the seacoast. And a lot of our private water supplies come from, they're recharged by surface water. So it's important to protect our streams and lakes as well as the groundwater, just as much so, because they recharge our water supplies in our private and some of our municipal well systems. So they were forced to put in some pilot thing to try to curb some of that contamination, but I'm not sure about the effectiveness of that. So there's a lot of activity. This isn't the only type of Superfund site that's like this in New Hampshire, unfortunately, but there are a lot of actors. There are a lot of long-term decades of work that's happened, decades worth of contamination polluting the surrounding areas that is one of the frustrating areas in our work that need to be addressed.
Our guest today is Mindy Messmer, and Mindy has been an environmental consultant, small business owner with a degree in public health, also a former state rep. And Mindy, hang with us for just a moment. We have to take a quick break here on 103.9 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. Feldis and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. 103.9 1450 WKXL and htalkradio.com. It's Feldis and Kale, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Our guest is Mindy Messmer, and we mentioned that Mindy was a state rep for 2 years in New Hampshire. and made a congressional bid as well, Mindy.
I did. I was concerned about what was happening on the federal level with regard to science-directed policy. We do see, you know, some threats that concern me, existential threats related to climate change and protecting our drinking water, all these things that I felt were really important to raise and to talk about. And through that process, I was really happy to be able to go from town to town and county to county in New Hampshire and talk about these issues and raise people's awareness about the importance of all of these issues. And it was a fun thing, and I really enjoyed it.
And part of that work, and you mentioned it earlier, is the EPA and the EPA's mm-hmm. critical role, especially with respect to Superfund sites. And you mentioned there's a little bit of debate about some of the state versus federal control of some of the ancillary effects of these Superfund sites. But notwithstanding that debate, in terms of the EPA, do you see significant movement in this new administration under President Biden to really take on some of these issues in water?
Yeah, we're definitely seeing signals. I mean, it's too early to really tell what the result will be, but we, you know, as activists, as people who watch this area very closely, I feel confident that we are going to make some change. And you know, we see the signals that some change is going to happen. We see some advancement in looking at we're seeing some of the law review really look at how the impacts will be on business in the future around these, the regulation of these chemicals and some proactive measures we're hoping that EPA will take. But it's not quick, so it's going to be a while still, and we have to all continue to press on all elected representatives, federal and state, to make sure that it happens and, you know, even let EPA and Biden know that, you know, this is important to all of us. So we're going to continue to press on this. One thing I want to talk about, you know, the power of the people, getting back to the Coakley landfill issue, one of the frustrations on the part of many of us was that the negotiations would go on between EPA and the polluter group in, you know, under a veil of secrecy. And so, you know, when we became aware that this was really affecting, that the people really, the taxpayers, who paid into the system, you know, municipal responsibility was a great part. It's about 62% of this polluter group's responsibility that the taxpayers were actually funding. We decided to take them on in court. In New Hampshire, we filed in Superior Court that we needed to let some sunshine in on the activities of this group. And because taxpayers funded this work, that the taxpayers, you know, had a right to understand what was going on. So push back in the legislature. The bill that we filed actually failed, but we took on this group in Superior Court, and we were happy to see that in 2018, Judge Delker in our Superior Court here in New Hampshire ruled in our favor in a 24-page landmark decision that these hybrid organizations had to open up their books and their activities to the public. So that was a big win on our part, and now we are able to watch the proceedings or be part of those proceedings that have to be held in public. So that's the first step in people knowing and understanding the impacts of Superfund sites like this that are hybrid organizations that the taxpayers need to be able to track. So hopefully we'll see some progress in the near future. But like you said, you know, I think the new administration seems to be taking a much more proactive stance on these, and we'll hope to see some progress in the next couple of years.
Mindy, any more political aspirations for you?
You know, I'm not sure right now. I'm not going to rule anything out. I think, you know, I'm always driven by the passion to help people understand how important these issues are. I think it's important to have scientists involved in government decision-making in a big way, especially, you know, when we see that people that are exposed to chemicals like PFAS are going to experience much more severe effects from a pandemic like COVID-19. There's been some new research lately that proves that it affects everything from our children's vaccinations to, you know, cancer in children and adults. So this is the kind of approach we need to take. We need to look at the science to direct us in coming up with policy to protect the people over the the cries of the lobbyists that try to prevent us from doing that in Concord and in Washington, D.C. So definitely something I'm passionate about, something that drives me to continue to activate people and to inform people and to work on these important issues.
And speaking of the need to have people protective of the public health and the environment in positions of public service and trust and public trust, you mentioned some of the influence of lobbyists. Can you talk about a recent appointment here at the state level and your concerns about that? You've been pretty public about that.
Oh, there's been a couple. You know, the reason I ran, so I did run also for the executive council here in District 3, which many people don't understand what the council does. It's a five-person elected body that has the last say on a lot of things, like appointments the governor makes, among other things, and budgets and lots of issues that are really important in the state of New Hampshire. So I ran for the council, and a lot of the things I ran on were appointments that I thought were important that were upcoming, and one of those was the replacement of Clark Freese, who is the assistant commissioner of the Department of Environmental Services. And unfortunately, we now have, hopefully it won't be as great an issue as we were concerned about, but a former EPA Region 1 administrator who did work for Dow Chemical as a lobbyist, and Dow is involved in some of this PFAS. They did manufacture some of these chemicals. So that's a concern that we raised about that appointment, and he was appointed, I believe, last week to assistant commissioner. So that's an example of how important it is for people to understand, you know, all of these things along the way, and continue to work to advocate to inform the public about the importance of taking action in these areas.
So just to get clarity on where that's at, so Governor Sununu's appointment of this lobbyist from Dow Chemical to assistant commissioner, Department of Environmental Services, was that presented to the executive council or voted on the executive council yet?
Yeah, it was a unanimous vote to support that appointment last week, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what other appointments or issues are coming down the pike that you see that you want to flag for listeners and really surface?
Well, you know, what has happened is, with respect to the Attorney General's office and to the court system in particular, because, you know, like we've talked about a little bit along the way, you know, we were challenged in our court system by 3M and Plymouth Water and Sewer about our PFAS drinking water regulations. We were able to successfully take on a hybrid entity, Superfund polluter group, in our superior court system. And so I'm very concerned about that avenue of protection here in the state of New Hampshire. There are, you know, I think there are some vacancies still in the Supreme Court system. There are always appointments going on at other various levels of the court system. And that's our backdrop for, you know, things that happen in the state of New Hampshire that is important to preserve. So I'm concerned about the Attorney General's office and the court system in New Hampshire and preserving those avenues for us to, you know, make sure that we can preserve our rights here in New Hampshire. So I'm not sure about coming up what any appointments are. I'm not sure if you're aware of any, Dan, that are kind of coming up really soon. But
not sure. But well, we got to wrap it up pretty quick. But is there, in terms of issues on water, is there anything that you want to flag coming up down the pike? Is there any public hearings or any legislation that you wanted to flag for listeners?
Yeah, there. Well, actually, this week the House is set to meet to pass through or act on some important legislation regarding medical monitoring, which is something we want the legislature to signal to the courts that when you're exposed to chemicals by a negligent polluter, or that you're able to get medical monitoring without having to go through an undue long process to get that. That's coming through the House this week.
Is this similar to the one that was vetoed by Chris Sununu?
Yeah.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's been I started it, I think, in 2017 was our first attempt to do this, and it's been not passed and then vetoed last year by Governor Sununu. So we're hopeful. I think it's going to pass on a party line vote or near party line vote this week to the Senate. So we're hopeful it'll pass through the Senate, and hopefully the governor will see it differently this time. There's some other bills going through that have to do with when you become aware of your being, you know, exposed to these chemicals and what your limitations are in the time frame that will double the time frame up to 6 years for you to be able to take action in our courts. Then there's some other important legislation around St. Gobain. So there are several things moving through this week in the House. We are also concerned about the fact that these chemicals having been used at all these airports and bases in the state of New Hampshire, what's happening with those chemicals. Right now, I believe the state is requiring this just to be stored, the excess materials, these foams that were used to put out fuel-based fires. We're concerned about the fact that across the country, these foams are being incinerated, and we don't want that to happen in New Hampshire, so we're hopeful that we tried this fall to get some legislation started. It was opposed by DES and pulled from one of the bills, so we're hopeful that that will happen in the near future, that we'll look first at the public health impacts associated with incinerating these products to the communities around them before we actually do that and make sure it's safe to do it before we actually do it. So those are the things that we're looking on the horizon. There's a lot of stuff that's going to happen if the Biden administration moves forward with things like surface water standards. There are a lot of industries that should be looking right now at, you know, whether their wastewater complies with what might be future regulations, landfill leachate, all that kind of stuff. There's a lot of layers of this onion to peel back, and we'll be doing that over the next few years in New Hampshire.
Well, Mindy, we want to thank you very much for being on the show today, and you've enlightened us and our listeners as to what is going on environmentally here in the state of New Hampshire. We appreciate that, and hope to have you back on the program in the not-too-distant future.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate being here.
Take care, Mindy.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Mindy Messmer with us on Feldis and Kale, 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. We are proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Feldis and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And, Dan, I'd like to get some things, you know, off my chest.
Go for it.
As we head down the home stretch of this program. First of all, I just want to read, you know, there's been a lot of controversy this week about Major League Baseball pulling the All-Star game out of the Atlanta area. Mm-hmm. And now ultimately moving it to Colorado, to the home of the Colorado Rockies in Denver. But I just want to read verbatim an article that was in the Savannah, Georgia Morning News less than a week ago. And just quick, Georgia lawmakers passed Senate Bill 202, an omnibus bill that makes sweeping changes to the state's voting laws. The controversial bill raised concerns among Democrats that changes to the absentee ballot and early voting laws would lead to increased voter suppression. The bill replaces the controversial signature match system with an ID requirement for absentee ballots. Voters must use their driver's license, state ID, voter card, or last four digits of their social security number to verify who they are when returning the ballot. SB 202 also calls for counties to have increased voting access. Counties must have two early voting periods on Saturday, Sunday. Early voting will be optional, with it taking place between 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. and the option to extend hours from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. It doesn't sound too restrictive to me, and the absentee ballot request period is shorter than it had been, but it starts 11 weeks before the elections and ends 11 days before the elections. That's one of the things. And, you know, Dan, you can't, you know, and Coca-Cola and Delta Airlines, Major League Baseball, among around 200 corporations making a huge issue and obviously costing the state by pulling the All-Star game, costing the state of Georgia over $100 million in revenue from that Major League All-Star game for these voting regulations, which I can't see. Maybe you can see it. I can't see how it limits access to voting. I don't get it.
Well, Ken, there's a lot of other provisions of the bill that are widely considered voter suppression. And so it's unfortunate that Georgia passed this and that the governor of Georgia signed it. And the result of implementing voter suppression is that people are going to speak out. And in this particular situation, corporations are taking action, and that's affecting Georgia's local economy. I should note that Georgia is not the only state that's considering voter suppression legislation. In fact, there's proposals in New Hampshire on voter suppression. So, look, you know, everybody should have the right to vote. Everybody should have their voice heard. Politicians shouldn't pick their voters. It should be the other way around.
They have drop boxes all over the state of Georgia. You have 11 weeks to do something about this, folks, prior to the election. You need four digits, the last four digits of your social security card or a social security number. Or you can do something, you can show an electric bill. You just have to show some kind of ID. Now, listen, Coca-Cola, they had a board of directors meeting this year. What did you have to show to get in? An ID, believe it or not, an ID. Can you get on a flight without an ID? Can you pick up tickets at a Major League Baseball game at will call without an ID? No, you can't. So why shouldn't you have to have an ID to vote? Some form of ID. You don't even have to have a license. Just social security number, an electric bill, you name it.
Well, some folks don't, and some folks have lost it. Some folks just don't, and there's other security reasons for that too. But here's the upshot is that every Democratic and Republican respected voting rights experts have called Georgia's legislation in totality voter suppression. That's why it's going to end up in court. I think there already been a challenge. And, you know, the consequence is what it is. And this disproportionately affects younger people. It disproportionately affects persons of colors and black Georgians. And you have this kind of legislation being proposed all around the country, Ken. And I think, look, what we need to do is make sure that people have the right to vote, to exercise. We don't silence that. Politicians shouldn't pick their voters. Voters should pick their politicians. And it is something that is a trend. It's a disturbing trend that's happening right now across the country, including, like I said, proposals in New Hampshire. And people should have the right to vote. It's that simple. And if you're a politician and you're tinkering with limiting voting, that should be a red flag for everybody. Another, this bill in Georgia, by the way, Kennedy, it criminalizes giving people a bottle of water when they're standing in line to vote.
It should, if it's coming from a candidate. I think it should.
Well,
I haven't heard the like of it in New Hampshire. I've never heard of people, giving out anything in line in New Hampshire. And maybe it's happened. I don't know, but I've never heard of it. I don't see that's an issue at all. In New York, you can give people in line, even if you represent a candidate, something that's up to a dollar in value, and that's it. You can do that in New York. That's the law. But I never even heard that this was an issue, giving out water in line or sandwiches or whatever.
Well, I think Georgia's a little bit different. You know, they got longer lines. They got Atlanta. It's hotter in Georgia, Ken, than it is New Hampshire.
They shouldn't have longer lines now, and you got 11 weeks to vote.
Well, look, there is a lot of issues in this bill, and I think we'll find out what the courts say. But look, there's a lot of piece of legislation being proposed around the country that ends up, in the end, functionally limiting the right to the ballot box. Mm. And I don't think that's right.
No. How about one day, tough on absentee ballots, you know, a tougher standard of getting absentee ballots, and one day, like 12 hours of being able to go to the polls. That's what we used to have. And there was very little controversy about that. I just think this whole thing is wacky, you know, incredibly stupid, the controversy over it. And I just don't get it. I can't get it through my thick skull. But it's just incredible.
I mean, you were right. I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, there wasn't controversy up until, this kind of trend has started 15, 20 years ago, where limiting the right to vote has kind of taken off at the state level. You know, you may recall back in the early 1990s, the motor voter law, and then a lot of that was in consequence of that. So you're seeing Republican legislatures doing this nationwide, and you're seeing people speak out, including in some of these corporations, including in Georgia. So it is what it is, and it's unfortunate, but hopefully voting rights will be maintained by the courts and these places that these laws are passed.
And folks, vote. That's the bottom
line.
Go
vote.
Vote. Feltus and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers.